Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
One part of our partnership with African countries is how to strengthen this system of intellectual property protection, protecting ideas so that we have a system that encourages more ideas and better ideas.
The U.S. plans to invest about $55 billion into Africa over the next 3 years.
It's a historic initiative that he launched today in front of 40-odd heads of government and leaders from Africa and many of the companies both from Africa and the U.S.
U.S. President Joe Biden pledges $350 million to facilitate digital transformation in Africa.
It's a plus, and we believe that it will do us a lot of good as a destination for Malawi, but also as a hospitality provider.
And Malawi waives visa requirements for selected countries in a bid to boost its tourism industry. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The U.S. plans to invest about $55 billion into Africa over the next 3 years. Jake Sullivan, the White House National Security Advisor, made the announcement on Monday. The announcement came ahead of President Joe Biden's statement that pledged $15 billion in trade and investment partnerships during the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit on Wednesday. For more on U.S. investment, intellectual property, and the signing of new Millennium Challenge Cooperation Agreement, I caught up with Ramin Talui. He is an American academic, civil servant, and financial advisor who serves as Assistant Secretary of State for Economic and Business Affairs in the U.S. Department of State.
Well, first of all, it's wonderful to be here with you, and wonderful to be here particularly today at the U.S.-Africa Business Forum, the purpose of which is really to bring together representatives of the U.S. government, of African governments, of U.S. business and Africa business to try to catalyze these connections and unleash some of the opportunity that you're mentioning. So the president announced a number of deals that were concluded during this business forum, but just as important is the connections that have been made. Just at lunch, I sat next to one CEO of a mobile communications company that was telling me about the meetings he had with U.S. Development Finance Corporation, other agencies of the U.S. government that are going to provide more opportunities to catalyze these kinds of investments in the future. So as we move to the end of the summit, the focus is on the follow-ups and taking advantage of some of these connections that have been made this week.
Talk to me about intellectual property, because I know there are some countries that have measures to prevent intellectual property theft, among other issues. How are you going to ensure that those who invest with their money, resources, whatever, their intellectual property is protected in those respective countries?
One of the things that's been most inspiring this week is to the opportunity to engage with Africa's youth and young people who have ideas for creating a better future. At the State Department, we hosted something we called the Innovators Gathering on Monday that included a pitch competition where various startup leaders gave their ideas for addressing various problems. The winner of that was a company called Healthbotics from Nigeria that was using technology to solve problems of access in the medical system. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of going to the African American History Museum, where the focus was on African creatives and filmmakers. In both of these instances, the education, the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears went into creating ideas, and it's very valuable to protect those ideas so young creators have the incentives to make those investments of their own personal energy. And as you can see with the examples that I gave, those ideas then benefit other members of society. And so one part of our partnership with African countries is how to strengthen this system of intellectual property protection, protecting ideas so that we have a system that encourages more ideas and better ideas.
Let's talk about, before you go, the MCC signing, because I've heard some of these countries very elated about them being declared their eligibility, or you know, the first, the second tranche. How is it going, and what do you see as the future of the cooperation between the U.S. and these African countries when it comes to the MCC signings?
Well, this has been a very successful foreign assistance program of the United States government. I happened to be in the U.S. Treasury Department about 20 years ago when the MCC was initially proposed and launched. And those standards that you mentioned are really serve two purposes. They ensure that assistance is used to maximal effect because those underlying conditions are in place. And it also provides an incentive for countries to strengthen those systems in order to attract that development funding from the MCC. So we're very pleased to sign the compact here during the African Leaders Summit, which is going to be focused on transportation. And transportation is incredibly important as a way of connecting people to markets, connecting farmers to markets, connecting small businesses to markets. So we're very proud of that program, and it continues to have a lot of potential to create ladders of opportunity on the continent.
Ramin Toluwi is an American academic, civil servant, and financial advisor who serves as Assistant Secretary of State for Economic and Business Affairs in the U.S. Department of State. He spoke with me from here in Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged $350 million to facilitate digital transformation in Africa. The announcement came days before the commencement of the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit, which ended on Thursday. Such an intervention, Biden says, will pave the way for more Africans to participate in the digital economy. For more about the initiative, as well as the digital economy and entrepreneurship in Africa, I sat down for an interview with Dilwa Seed. He is the Special Representative for Commercial and Business Affairs at the U.S. Department of State.
Today, the president made a historic announcement. We are mobilizing almost $800 million worth of investment, which will come from public sector and private sector both, to help Africa enter the digital revolution. It's a historic initiative that he launched today in front of 40-odd heads of government and leaders from Africa and many of the companies both from Africa and the U.S. So there are three aspects to developing the digital economy in Africa, which will be addressed with this initiative. Number one, it is about connectivity. Mm. We know there have been some improvements, obviously, with mobile connectivity, but we still have ways to go. And numbers we've heard is 450 million people in Africa still do not have internet connectivity. Mm. And that's a significant number. Yeah. We will see a whole lot of investment to make sure that countries across Africa get to have an open, interoperable, secure, and reliable internet. Mm. So that's our commitment. Number two, it is about developing the human capital. Mm-hmm. Before I joined the administration, I was in the tech world. Mm-hmm. And I know firsthand that without having a proper human talent, tech talent, you cannot really do justice to mm-hmm. being a formidable player mm-hmm. in the digital economy. So we are committing to supporting development of talent, especially women and especially folks in underserved regions across Africa. And the third is making sure that we can facilitate an environment where digital economy can thrive. The reality is that you have to really modernize your operating framework as societies. You have to develop IP regulations. You have to develop regulations that's for fintech. Mm-hmm. And we know there are countries like Kenya, for example, who have done really well, where half GDP processes through M-Pesa mm-hmm. because they have define what how a fintech would operate. So you need those kind of things defined all across the continent for you to really be able to embrace digital economy. So this initiative, which is a significant investment, $350 million coming from the USG support mm-hmm. Across all of our agencies, and $450 million that will be mobilized through private sector, mm-hmm. but it's designed to address all three aspects mm-hmm. so that we can help Africa enter the digital age.
So when will this initiative take off and what will be its lifespan? And will there be mechanisms to monitor the progress of it?
Yeah. So I would say parts of it's already happening. So the good news is we have a number of places where we have active deals that are led by DFC, Durban Finance Corporation. One example, Africa Cell. DFC is supporting a $100 million investment with Africa Cell to upgrade its mobile networks in Congo and Sierra Leone. There is $300 million worth of investment for data centers in South Africa. So those are significant initiatives, Peter. Now, obviously, we need partners on the other end for us to quickly identify projects, make sure we have capacity of folks who are my counterparts on the other end for us to bring this investment online. Lifespan is, look, we would love to do this soon, but, you know, this is massive, ambitious initiative. And there is an uneven plane in terms of capacity of various governments. So we're going to have to see where we can go first and what we need to develop. But, of course, you can think of it as a long, sustained partnership to make sure that the entire continent comes online the way it should be. We recognize that Africa is not a monolith. There are countries that are much farther along, other countries are not. You've seen the president has been very intentional about making sure that we are serving the underserved as well. So we don't want to just focus on a few countries. We want to make sure that we show up in places that have been left behind. And so, you know, I can see it as a mid to long-term effort.
Now, one of the common theme of this summit is partnership. I hear it all along. With this initiative, how strong a partnership will this U.S. administration seek from partners across the continent in order to actualize this initiative and make it, you know, quite materialized and serve the underserved?
Right. So the reality is, again, given the scale, the span, and the complexity of this initiative, we alone cannot and we should not do that. It requires not only governments on the other side, but we also need other stakeholders, U.S. companies, U.S. entrepreneurs, diaspora entrepreneurs who have a very important role to play here. We have 2 million Americans of African descent. African Americans in a country which is about 50% of the population is also part of the African diaspora. We need to also make sure they are part of this process as well. And so it will take all of us to get involved. Public sector, obviously the government's on the other end. Private sector, you saw Microsoft and Cisco and others. GE made some announcements today. But also innovative startups in Silicon Valley. There are some that are right now working on deals that my office is helping with as we speak. So there is just no other way to do this without a partnership approach, and we're being very realistic about this. We don't believe that one government can go and help solve the problem. That model does not work. We know that, right? So we are upfront about this. We also are upfront about the fact that our partners are going to have to step up in terms of providing the capacity for us to work with them and make sure that this all this investment and effort that we're doing can be productive.
Dilwa Said is the Special Representative for Commercial and Business Affairs at the U.S. Department of State. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Sam Matekane, the newly installed Prime Minister of Lesotho, says he plans to run his administration like a business. Prominent business magnate, Matekane says he plans to hold the government accountable under his leadership. The new prime minister also promises to implement policies that he says will improve the living conditions of the people. The prime minister, who is in Washington to participate in the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit, also met U.S. lawmakers on the sidelines of the meeting. In an exclusive interview with VOA, Prime Minister Matekane says he has a social contract with citizens that he says will make the Kingdom of Lesotho great again. Here is the concluding part of my interview with Sam Matekane.
Yeah.
Within the first 100 days since you've come to power, what have you done and what do you plan to do before the 100 days is over? And what should be the expectations of the ordinary citizen, so to speak, to expect from your administration? What should they expect?
The first 100 days... Let me start by saying that our town is a dark city. My first 100 days, one of the things that I'm going to make sure is done is to light our city, which is our capital town, Maseru. And also to patch up the potholes that are all over town. And also to make sure that we have already started in agriculture, because we want to make sure that we have food security is one of our most important things in our lives. We need to secure food for our nation. We have already started engaging ourselves in planting. So we have done that, and many other small things. But those are just the three major ones.
With all these that you've mentioned, all will take quite a sizable amount of money. How will you get funding? How will you fund these projects?
The funding we have already secured. We have started this project that I'm mentioning because we have had some funds for it. So it's actually not even a large amount of money that were required to do that. So we are carrying on doing the same thing, and it will be done by within that 100 days. It will be completed.
You talked about energy. Lesotho has a lot of fresh water. How do you intend using that as a competitive advantage to generate power?
When you look at renewable energy production, we are definitely going to go into hydropower just to make sure that we have enough electricity supply for us as a country. And beyond that, we're going to have access, and then so that we can be able to export it to our neighbors. Again, we're going to take advantage of the wind energy and also the solar energy and the hydrogen. So all those are the things that we're working on.
I understand you signed the MCC compact too. What are your expectations of this agreement? What do you want to see happen?
Okay, first of all, I must thank the U.S. government for the first compact that they gave to us, which went very, very, very well. Now, lately, we have signed Compact 2, which is supposed to start in the next year or so. We have just, there were some laws that they needed us to pass before finally. But as of yesterday, we got the royal assent to those three laws which they mentioned. And then it's a done deal now. Yeah, we have provided what was lacking. Yeah, so that is done. And those laws were fighting corruption.
Right.
And also counter domestic violence, rights of customary widows, and the Millennium Challenge.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the fight against corruption. How do you plan to do that? Because a lot of people of Lesotho have often accused politicians of being corrupt. You said you want to do things differently. How are you going to fight corruption?
First of all, we're going to make sure that rule of law is in place. And then also the respect for human rights. And also our labor laws. And a stable government.
You know, the Lesotho have had quite a bit of a checkered history politically, with a few instances of instability. SADC has proposed and helped try to have reforms. How is this going to be carried out? And when you are done, how confident are you that the political wranglings will be a thing of the past?
The previous government was working on the reforms through the help of our neighbor, also through SADC. Yes. We have taken where they left. They left before they can complete the reforms. And we have made it a priority that within the 100 days, part of those reforms, the most important ones, will be passed still within the 100 days. Yeah. It's our priority to make sure those reforms are being passed.
Sam Matekane is the newly installed Prime Minister of Lesotho. He spoke with me from here in Washington. Malawi is waiving visa requirements for selected countries in a bid to boost its tourism industry, which was badly affected by COVID-19. Government statistics show that during the pandemic, international tourist arrivals to Malawi plunged by 80%. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In a statement, the Ministry of Tourism says the arrangement will be applied to tourists from 16 countries. Those include the United States, Britain, France, China, Russia, and Germany. Simon Mvundula is the spokesperson for the Ministry of Tourism, Culture and Wildlife in Malawi. He says the action is based on research that found the country was losing tourist business to other African countries because of its high visa fees.
We are talking of a situation where we are competing for the same market, and we thought for potential tourists not to come to Malawi on the basis of visa processes, visa fees, we thought that the benefits of doing that would definitely outweigh the cost that might incur from the removal of the visa.
Currently, tourists coming to Malawi are required to pay $50 per single entry, while a multiple entry visa for 6 months costs $150. A multiple entry visa for 12 months is $250. Malawi instituted visa fees in 2015 to all the countries that required Malawians to pay visa fees. However, the government statistics show that during the COVID-19 pandemic, international tourist arrivals to Malawi plunged by 80%. Temwa Kanjadza heads the sales and marketing for Sunbelt Hotels and Resorts. She welcomes the arrangement of waiving visa fees for the selected countries.
These are high spenders, you know. So in terms of a good margin on the rates that we sell, it's a plus already. But also in terms of maybe forex for the country, it's a plus already. And we believe that it will do us a lot of good as a destination for Malawi, but also as a hospitality provider.
The Executive Director for Tourism Council of Malawi, Innocent Galiati, also applauds the move, noting that neighboring Zambia waived visa fees for selected countries a few months ago. Galiati said Malawi could have gone a step further by fixing problems with the electronic visa system that the government uses.
Because we have been receiving complaints, and we have seen on social media tourists blatantly writing that they prefer Zambia than Malawi because of the visa system, not the visa cost. The system takes too long to accept certain uploads. It also used to take quite a long time to accept payments. It is asking for so much information that may no longer be necessary.
Malawi's Department of Immigration adopted the international e-visa system in 2019 in hopes of easing the time-consuming process associated with the acquisition of travel documents. Pasquale Zulu is the national spokesperson for the Immigration Department in Malawi. He says the department is taking measures to rectify the problem of the e-visa system.
I should admit here that maybe to take time, because our online portal was being managed by a certain company, but negotiations are at advanced stage so that the portal should be fully managed by the department.
Meanwhile, Malawi's government says it plans to implement the visa-free waiver arrangement starting in January. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
In South Africa, events at the elective conference of the governing African National Congress, the ANC, have shown it to be more divided than ever before. At this stage, President Cyril Ramaphosa appears certain to be re-elected party leader, giving him a strong mandate to steer the ANC into national polls in early 2024. But as Darren Taylor reports, the conference has been marred by tension and disruption.
Political analysts and opposition parties have predicted the ANC's demise many times before, but never this loudly. The latest polls show the popularity of the party that's ruled South Africa for almost three decades is declining rapidly and would lose an election held right now. Corruption and mismanagement have deepened poverty and inequality. South Africa has the highest unemployment rate in the world and some of the worst violent crime. An electricity crisis the ANC has been unable to solve for almost 15 years means daily blackouts of up to 12 hours. Ramaphosa has blamed this crisis and others on Jacob Zuma, who he ousted in late 2017. A commission of inquiry found that during Zuma's 9-year rule of party and country, he appointed cronies to loot state-owned enterprises in a process known as state capture. Yet, Zuma remains popular in the ANC, as shown when he entered the conference venue as Ramaphosa was trying to open the event. Zuma smiled, laughed, and waved at the crowd as Ramaphosa gazed down at his notes.
Comrades, let us start with our conference. Thank you, let us now start.
But Zuma's supporters ignored Ramaphosa's pleas, forcing ANC chairperson Gwede Mantashe into action.
Security, please come here. Continue, President. Security, come.
After order was restored, Ramaphosa took revenge. Glaring toward the Zuma camp, the president reminded delegates of the damage being done by the power outages, known as load shedding.
The effects of load shedding are felt every day by households, businesses, schools, hospitals, government offices, and indeed by our people generally. Load shedding severely constrains economic growth. It constrains job creation, poverty alleviation and development.
Ramaphosa said corruption had almost destroyed national electricity regulator Eskom.
An important part of the work to reverse the effects of state capture is the recovery of funds that were paid illegally to a number of companies.
Law enforcement agencies have linked some of these companies directly to Zuma and relatives and friends of the former president. Ramaphosa's attempts to rid the party of officials he's called criminals by firing them from top posts and prosecuting them have made him powerful enemies. Political analyst Lesiba Tefo says some in the ANC clearly wanted the conference to collapse, showing the party remains riven by factions.
Who was going to collapse it? It is the same members of the same organization, not an opposition from Mars or Jupiter. When you talk renewal, rebirth, and all that, and the tension that I have seen, and the grand entrance, the competition in song, there is still a lot of work that has to be done.
Not least by Ramaphosa, who faces a scandal himself in connection with the theft of almost $600,000 from his luxury ranch in early 2020. An independent legal panel has found he may be guilty of criminal conduct, a finding he's contesting in court. But Tefo says Ramaphosa's strong performance at the conference so far has shocked his enemies.
He asserted his authority, he was firm, yet at the same time polite, and ultimately there was calm. Incidentally, I rarely see Ramaphosa being that confident and eloquent. It's almost like, I do not care, but I'm in charge and I'm in control.
Even leading ANC members say the party, accustomed to absolute power, must now transform into one able to hold onto a sliver of power by forming coalitions. If this process fails, they say, the ANC will be consigned to history. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
This is is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Croatia defeated Morocco 2-1 in the World Cup third place playoff on Saturday, with Mislav Orzic calling home the winner. Joko Gavidol, one of the stars of the tournament in Qatar, headed Croatia into the lead in the 7th minute at the Khalifa International Stadium, but Ashraf Dari brought the Atlas Lions of Morocco level right away. Orzic's terrific calling strike late in the first half ensured Croatia took home the bronze medal, the 11th World Cup in a row a European team has finished third. Walid Regragui, the Moroccan coach, said there was a lot for his team to proudly reflect on after they became the first African semi-finalist in World Cup history. Ghanaian coach and sports analyst coach Chris Nimley described Morocco's performance at the Qatar 2022 FIFA World Cup as a proud moment for the African continent.
They've made Africa proud. We've waited for this for so long. In 2010, the continent was a kick away from achieving. It's taken us another 12 years to come this close. We are grateful to the Moroccans.
Staying with football news, Cape Verde will host the inaugural WAFU A Zonal Qualifiers of the African Schools Football Championship from Monday 19th of December to Wednesday 21st of December 2022. The three-day championship will take place at the Cape Verdean island of Santiago. The participating schools will be competing for a ticket to the Maiden Continental CAF African Schools Football Championship tournament in April 2023. In basketball news, Alexandria Sporting Club made history for Egypt and the club by becoming the first team to be crowned champions of the FIBA Africa Champions Cup for women on Saturday in Maputo after beating Costa do Sol of Mozambique 65-58 in the final. A game high of 21 points from guard Sierra Dillard and 18 points from center Haga Amer helped to get the job done for the Egyptians. In the third and fourth place match, Fevereiro do Maputo beat Interclube 71-67 to take the bragging rights and the bronze medal. And now to athletics, where four-time Boston Marathon champion Kenya's Catherine Ndariba has urged upcoming athletes to run and win clean. The East African country avoided a sanction by governing body World Athletics, despite having 55 athletes serving suspensions after committing to spend $25 million over the next 5 years to combat doping. The marathon champion says doping has become a major threat to the growth of athletics in Kenya, hence harsh punishments should be imposed on those involved in the vice.
Whatever has been happening, it is a shame.
And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As the global community is being entertained today in the final of the World Cup, it may be useful to reflect on what we have all witnessed over the past 3 weeks about this contest. 32 national teams that have won the right to be at the contest, at the games, displayed magnificent skill, greed, and thoroughness in all of the games. No team failed to impress, even those who did not reach the final. There were, of course, so-called Cinderella teams, but overall, the performance has been extremely good. The African continent, was represented by five national teams, that of Morocco, Tunisia, Senegal, Ghana, and Cameroon. All of them acquitted themselves excellently. They proved to the world, if there was any need to for proof, that Africa is indeed ready and is able to play at the highest level of football. Morocco deserves special mention because the team demonstrated its determination to reach the final. They displayed a 5-4 defensive strategy that many admired, to the point that this earlier score was their own goal, and only in the semi-final did they concede two goals to France, by who scored in the first 10 minutes and in the last 5 minutes of the contest, which Morocco lost. Nevertheless, all Africa was gripped by the display by Morocco, and they showed what could be done when governments are prepared to give good infrastructure where talented Africans, both men and women, can be trained to play at the world level. Morocco also showed that you can have an African manager that can lead its team to the highest level. What should be borne in mind is what the manager of Morocco said just after they lost to France. He told his team and the world that Morocco would start the next day to prepare for the next World Cup contest to be held 4 years from now in North America, hosted by Mexico, United States, and Canada. The government of Qatar deserves high marks. It prepared the platform for the games magnificently, and it is difficult to find any major hiccups. So the world should congratulate the government and people of Qatar, the first country in the Arab world to stage the World Cup, despite the criticisms that were made against the country of Qatar since FIFA decided to award them the game this year. Some of these criticisms were so inordinate that the FIFA president was prompted to push back, calling some of this criticism a bridge too far. Now, as you continue to enjoy this final between France and Argentina, the African country may have no dog in this fight. But obviously, all enthusiasts in the African continent would wish that the better team wins. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Kiri kiri don't fool, oh, Mr. President, make we pack up.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
2 years punishments, don't come to 13 years. Awaiting trial. Family and friends will pray for me on a daily basis. They don't tire. Bang, 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 ding, ding, bang, bang, ding, ding.
Have mercy by your children. Lord have mercy. They call me Lamborghini.
See me when I come, see me when I leave, naked in the coffin. Put me in the earth and I'm nothing. Give me peace when I'm 95, give me love when I'm 100. But give me cash when I'm 13. Is it come, is it go? But we all know that the world only wants to go where the cash flow. Inevitably, destiny calls, we can never have it all. We just take a walk down the corridor. I'm living on the wild hand side. Poverty and disease and death in sight. The kings of the kingdom, the keys of wisdom, locked in a vault outside. This world's not gonna end, at least not in 1,000 years. It's time to be good to it. Every hate, every war, every pandemic. Every child abused in any continent. Oh yeah.
Oh Lord, have mercy on your children, children. Aye. Oh Lord, have mercy on your children, children. Say, say. Man, I go leave a bread alone. Man, I go leave a fish alone. Too many evil happening. See them, boys and kill them. World for negative in a ball, man, I see it and open.
Enough, digging the past enough. We keep on blaming other people as the causes of the reasons that we're giving up. Beginning to get tired in the tides in the circle of the wrong regard. Get it, we're inspired by fear. We're living in the darkness, and that means that every shadow we see as a dark trick before they prove it. They get to call us the dark continent. So much land, so we could plant seeds of destruction. Violence gives birth to violence. And then we get to ask the question, why this?
Tonight,
temperature rise. 400 Fahrenheit, baby, turn down the light. It's a new fight, so have no mercy on me. Your rage on me, oh, why you mean? Take over me, you're mugging me, malign me. Make me a maga, my body, I don't surrender. Hey, before you descend on me, would you be my commander? Me and you against the world, turn it down, turn the light down, 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 down. Anybody call, I dey beg you, I don't turn off my light, no, let them call me one day after, cause this no be 10 minutes matter, everybody, yeah, 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 as you body, yeah, 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 yeah,
and that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, rising early makes the road short. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
I'm taking my heart. It's all.